Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Weekender here on Planet FM. Now, well, I've just noticed, hopefully you're hearing me, because the simple reason is that something's happening is pretty much happening to the fader boards here. And if anyone isn't hearing me, or if they can they text me, those that know me, on my personal number to say that we're going ahead. Anyway, if we can just... Before we go any further, a big shout out to Father Ted's Original Irish Pub. They're based at 1 Wellesley Street West in the CBD. They have a selection of local craft and international draft beers on tap. They have a selection of bottled beers, fine wines, good spirits, great food and music Wednesday through to Sunday. So make Father Ted's your location to go to. Their number is 09377 3142, or you can email them fatherteds@hotmail.com. Well, I hope we're on the and I hope we're and on the line as he joins us every Saturday, and he might be in for a break at some point. He's been well behaved. He's former All Black AJ Whitten. Good morning to you, AJ, mate.
Yeah, good morning. Now, you're coming through loud and clear, probably the best you've sounded, but a lot of people will probably be saying, bugger, that we're not off here. But anyway, we will continue.
Well, yeah, there'll be maybe some internally here too. we can't throw stones in a glass house, AJ. We cannot throw stones in a glass house. Anyway, AJ, it's always great having a chat to you every Saturday, and I'm just going to say this to you. Saturday, unbelievable. A whitewash, you can call it a Canes wash, whatever. Hurricane 60, Chiefs 5, and I have to say it was close when they first kicked off, but to be quite honest with you, the Hurricanes just showed why they are, why all of us have been saying they're the finished article. They were superb. The combination of Roy Gard and Love, we look at Morby and Finney, and we look at Amua, Dearns, there was just so many. And, you know, when we saw some of those props throwing passes to wingers, which, you know, we have a look around, not even a decent and second five or centre can throw those passes. Just your thoughts on that, AJ?
Well, like you, I think there was a state of shock to a degree, but then you just sit back and go, yeah, they are the finished article. They were the top two sides. First of all, Chiefs, yeah, disappointing. Bridesmaid once again. There's no doubt I thought it'd be a lot closer, more competitive, but just goes to show you how focused the Canes were and the conditions. They know these conditions. They played them superbly. I think that unsettled the Chiefs to a degree because they made a couple of mistakes. D-Mac, of course, you're in the spotlight. We're in the 10, and that just compounded the way they started. They never got off to a start. So it was more or less done and dusted after 20 minutes, and we're going, well, let's just sit back. Instead of bemoaning the competition or the competitors of the Chiefs, just admire how the Hurricanes went about their business. And you mentioned it, from number one right through to 22 or three, whoever came on, they just played superbly. And I think that's just the combination of them, the belief, the way that they've attacked this season. They've scored the most points, the most tries, some household names that have come into the brief through TV, and Morby, Tulisi, the new prop, Namir. So I think they all deserve the Dearns. I mean, these guys have just stamped their mark on the game, and it was just a pleasure to watch. Disappointing in some ways, but congratulations, and they thoroughly deserved the win. They were just by far the most competitive side in the competition.
Absolutely, and I have to say, when we looked at that final, like, I have to say, Damien McKenzie really didn't have one of his best games, I will say that right now, but they, even the most daunted Chiefs loose forwards really were outgunned. And you look at it, Lackey, Shields and Cariffy just had fantastic games. And I just think it was just the style in which the Hurricanes played. It was just so good to watch. I had so many people saying, oh, God, you know, this is not really a final and this is the disgrace of a final. Well, absolute BS as far as I call it. I think the credit should be given to the Hurricanes and I don't think there is enough credit given to them.
Hey, that's a fair point too, because it's one-sided. There is natural disappointment because you always want the classic final of 22-19 or a 33-28 going to the wire, a try in the end to win it. Because what it did lack was that tenseness, that on the edge of your seat. But then again, you've got to turn it around and just show you how well they played. And I'm sure you, the players, or the Hurricanes are saying, well, you know, 60 points, you know, just give us the kudos we deserve. And they certainly do. And, you know, the players just took to those conditions. They scored some really good tries, but it just showed you the confidence and the belief in the side. And I'm going right through to the 23 when the reserves come on. There was no issues with replacements coming on. The boys that got called off went off with a smile. The other ones came on, and they just kept up that momentum and that quality. So, yeah, you're dead right. Congratulations to the Hurricanes. Best side by far. You take the victory because, you know, it could be another 10 years before they win another one. So, you know, congratulations to them. And as they say, there's not enough positives about it, I guess, but probably talking about the Chiefs to a degree, who didn't really fire a shot. Some of your name players, you mentioned DMAC, under all sorts of pressure. That puts a bit of a question mark there. You talk about the loose forwards there and Jacobson and Parker, and you're thinking, well, not quite fired on the night, obviously outplayed, but some of them would have done their little reputations a wee bit of damage and put maybe the spotlight on others contending for those test match number 15, 1 to 15 starts. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting in that first team that Dave Rennie names for sure.
Absolutely, and I'm still trying to work out what is... but we've still got problems with our faders. Jesus, I have to say to people, you know, when they use this damn fader, can they just make sure it's all okay? AJ, I'm really peeved, and I'm going to have a real crack at someone.
That after the show, mate.
Believe me, I don't think we're even on air. I've just got to give someone a call just to check it right now. So I'm hoping we're on air, but it looks like we're not, and I'm really pissed about this, to be honest with you. But anyway, we keep going. The All Blacks team was named. Dave Rennie's first All Blacks team. Noumea, Morby, Finney, Segner are the new caps. Hannah's on standby. Artie and Anton Lennox-Brown are back. But there's no place for Rico Ioane, but generally it's not a bad side.
No, and I think you picked it. Congrats to you too, mate, because you picked a Morby, and boy, has he come on leaps and bounds, this Hurricane utility and winger. Certainly deserved a nod. You picked Segner as well. I'm glad Larkhide's there, because I think he was one of the loose forwards of the day in the final. I think he's starting to mature and developing into a very good loose forward. But, congratulations, Segner. I think just his consistency got there ahead of Kariffi, plus also his ability in the line-out. Let's not overlook that. He does a lot of ball securing in the line-out for the Blues, so I think that added another arrow to the belt for him. And I like the reward for Noumea to be selected in the front row. But apart from that, much of a nut, muchness. Kyle Preston, of course, ahead of Hotham. Obviously, Dave Rennie and his crew see something there, but definitely the Cam Roygaard Love Show. Does that combination deserve a start? Well, I would say yes. Your reward success.
And just on that, AJ, just your feelings on the Anton Segner's elevation, if you can just give me a minute.
Yeah, I just thought that he was one man that stood out week in, week out for the Blues. At times played some good footy, and others looked a wee bit lost or a wee bit disjointed. He just kept his motivation and his leadership there. I thought he played consistently well, and he'd been rewarded. He's been there or thereabouts for a while, Piggy. So I think the selectors have seen enough of him and think that he's got some value to add to the squad. I don't think we've seen the best of him. I don't think he's been able to highlight all his ability due to the pack at times not being dominant, and what could have been if he was playing for the Hurricanes, having that latitude. So, yeah, very interesting and between those two, but feel a bit sorry for Jack Griffey. His time may still come, but he's just going to have to watch from the sidelines at present.
Well, I was going to say, Jack Griffey's time has come, and the good news is apparently I've just got a call from someone. We're on air, and fortunately it was a bit of concern. Now, whether it goes to, whether it transfers over to the podcast, we're not too sure at this stage, but we're on air live. I am, but in just saying that too, this will be important for Dave Rennie. I think France, we don't know, they're bringing out probably not their top side.
Mm-hmm.
The Irish have a few injuries. Italy's an unknown, but we should beat them. So it's just very, very interesting.
Well, it's an important role because obviously for Dave Rennie, his first time, different coaching panel in regards to the people who've come on board. So everyone's sort of starting with a bit of a clean slate here, but very important for the All Blacks to lay a foundation. We don't want to look too far ahead, but we know that the tours of all tours is coming, and later in August where they go to Africa on that 6-week odd tour, 3 test matches. So it's very important that we see the confidence and a pattern and a belief in what they're doing. So these 3 test matches, from my point of view, are certainly important to lay that foundation and give everybody confidence that we are playing the game we want to with the talent we've got, with the players, and that we can go into that tour knowing that we're going to be very competitive.
Absolutely. And, of course, then we look at then there's the Maori All Blacks are playing at Japan 15. And, of course, also in Super Rugby, our pick, it's the All-In Round, Chiefs Manawa versus Hurricanes Poa. And at 7:05 tonight, it's the Blues Women versus Matatu, top of the table clash.
Yeah, no, there'll be some good footy. Great game last week between the Manawa and the Blues. So we went to the wire. So, yeah, the competition's well and truly underway.
Absolutely. Well, AJ, what does the rest of the day hold towards you?
Well, I'm just going to take the dog out for a walk in a minute, and then I'm going down to the Grammar, Iraqi Domain. They've got the under 85s playing their match. Grammar Old Boys against...
You believe you've been helping out.
Yeah, what they call their teams, they've got some great names, these guys. I think they're called the...
Grouse
Houses or Grouse Dozers. And so I've got a couple of young men, mates of mine, Mr. Master Carrick and Oggy are playing. So I'm going down, went down and saw them train. Big game, a knockout stage. And then they go, hopefully, next round in the semi. So, yeah, I'm going down 1 o'clock and see them play.
Did they know who you were, AJ? Or if they didn't, I'm sure they definitely knew who you were by the end of training.
Well, it's quite funny because you walk down these young men, of course, in their late 20s, very respectful. Just a delight, really. And I think some of them felt a bit sorry for me and brought out a bit of a walker and a rocking chair and watched the training. But honestly, could not fault their manners and the way they these young men attacked their training. So, yeah, really looking forward to it. It's great to see these boys under 85 continue their rugby legacy in their clubs.
It's so important. It is just so damn important. And I really wish that, you know, in reality, they have a short season. Maybe look to let them combine with North Harbour and have a Auckland North Harbour competition, so they get
more. Enough a day to sort out. Sometimes wisdom is buried deep in the administration, Peggy. So we can take that later.
AJ, say no more, please. AJ, you have a wonderful day, mate. Yeah, well, we're on here, which is the main thing. Whether we get to podcast, I don't know, and because, you know, a lot of people like to listen to you give me a hard time.
No way, mate. I'm just getting a pair of high heels out for Mrs. Wheaton's wardrobe for you for that dress-up tonight. I'll talk to you off here.
Hey, whoa, that's my private business. Thank you, bye. That was AJ Wheaton, and I have to say, always good having a chat to AJ. Okay, next up, we're going to talk the regional rugby wrap with Kevin Hicklin. Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. Apologies about using the P word on the air. I was just a bit frustrated, but I was able to go out and just double check that we were on air. It's just a concern. You know, you put all this hard work in, you're not sure if you're ever on air. Anyway, just before we go to our regional club rugby wrap, a big shout out to Force Electrical. Force Electrical was started in 2014 by Nick Brakovich and has since grown into a trusted name across the wider region. Why you should choose them? Well, first of all, they're reliable and they have knowledge that sets them apart. They stay ahead of the local industry standards and technology. What they do? Well, what can't they do? They can cover residential and commercial projects, ongoing electrical maintenance, solar panel systems with inverters and battery storage and ELV solutions. So any electrical work, whether it's residential, commercial, whatever, give Nick a call at Force Electrical. His number is 021-628-341, or you can email him, nick@forceelectrical.co.nz. While Stephen Harris is preparing for a big match, as we still have some rounds in regional rugby, here to join us. Well, we know him as the voice of Bowls, but he's bloody good on club rugby. Kevin Hicklin, g'day, mate.
Good morning. It's a beautiful morning here in Auckland for what we'll call it, playoff day for the various grades around Auckland.
It certainly is, and of course then, but we've also got some other regional rugby. So what we're going to do is we start off way up north in Northland and we go to the games over there. Now, it looks like, a spoiler for people who are in Northland, it looks like Mid-Northland will finish top by quite a bit, but these are the games. Hikarangi versus Otamatea. Carmo, who defaulted last week, they have a game against Wellsford, a very much do-or-die game. Old Boys Marist versus Western Sharks, and Ngātahine Moriwa versus Kerikeri. Mid-Northland versus Horohoro. Now, I'm going to say this right now, Kevin. Some of the rugby up in Northland, there are people go out and watch it, there's a real community feel. Like, I'm looking at this first game, Hikarangi, I think they'll be too good for Otamatea.
Yeah, well, you know, it's 9 and 10 playing one another, isn't it? It's anyone's game, but the good thing is that people are getting out and watching club rugby, which is great to see. And you know, Northland have been faced with defaults as with other unions, and just highlight some of the challenges that we've got there. So, in club rugby at present. So, but it's good to see that there's a full round of, the 10 teams hopefully around the clubs of Northland playing today.
Yeah, well, I think Hikarangi should beat Otamatea. Big game, Carmo versus Wellsford. Carmo need to win this. They had to default. They had no front rowers against Mid-Northern. Wellsford have been going really well this year, Kevin. I suppose you've probably got to give the home advantage to Carmo, the old club of
Funeral. Well, I actually picked Wellsford to win that match, actually.
Ooh.
I think they've got a bit of consistency to show at Wellsford, and I'm picking Wellsford to have a win today over Carmo.
Okay, Old Boys Marist versus Western Sharks, Kevin. Go, Kevin.
Well, I know what I'd like the result to be, etc. But I think Western Sharks might have the edge over Old Boys Marist today.
Ngātahine Moriwa versus Kerikeri.
Yeah, I go with Moriwa in that game. I think they're pretty consistent performers here in the north, and I'd back Moriwa over Kerikeri today.
And of course, Mid-Northern versus Horohoro, probably the easiest game to pick out of all of them.
Yes, Mid-Northern will continue their run, I'm sure, up there in the north today over Horohoro. And, as they build towards the final stages of their season, that Mid-Northern has certainly proven to be, the class team, haven't they?
Absolutely. Anyway, so we move down the motorway, down to the North Harbour Union now. We have the plate semi-final. The winner of this plays Kumu. Maharangi versus Helensville.
You'd think Maharangi would win that match.
Yeah, you...
Yeah, I'd think that they would win that match in that plate event, you know, which, of course, then the winner plays Kumi, who've got the bye this week. It's a bit of a strange setup down the shore, isn't it? Today. One plays seven, two plays five, three plays four. And then you've got Kumi, who've got a bye, who will play the winner of that other match to make the four up. It just seems a bit strange.
Yeah, nine teams, and, you know, why would you have? And it doesn't make sense. I'm not here to really criticise North Harbour on how they run.
I'm not criticising them.
Because when we look at this, we've got a top six here, Kevin. Now, this is how it goes. The three winners and the highest loser goes through to the semis next week. So it's North Shore versus Silverdale, East Coast Base versus Takapuna, and Massey versus Northcote. The first game, I think, is fairly easy to pick. North Shore have been the best team.
One playing seven, and North Shore will be very, very consistent throughout the year. And, yeah, I'm picking that they'll continue that this afternoon.
East Coast Bays versus Takapuna, that looks like really the match of the round there.
Interesting. East Coast Bays had a bit of resurgence this year. Whether it's going to be enough, I don't know. Takapuna, of course, strong side. They've been a strong performer over the years because they're playing at East Coast Bays, aren't they? They're playing it.
Yeah.
So that might give them an advantage over Takapuna. That's two plates five. So there's not a great deal between them, really, just like the next one where three playing four with Massey playing Northcote.
Yeah, I think Massey just have the edge on this one there, Kevin, from what I've seen this year in North Harbour rugby.
Yeah, I've ticked off Massey much more than likely. I know Doug O'Lightly and others wouldn't be happy with that, but Brett Craze and those staunch Northcote supporters. But, I think Massey might get the job done there.
I can tell you something. If you're listening, I know you would definitely have an opinion and you will share it with both myself and Kevin. But there's some words we can't even put on radio because we could get ourselves in trouble. Because I can just imagine Dougie. I could just imagine Dougie on that one. Anyway, we go to Counties Manukau, and of course they go into the final round, and it's important for a couple of teams, but the first one, Karaka versus Mangurewa. Mangurewa really need to win this to really get into that top four, but I think Karaka are just too good.
Yeah, and looking at that, it's actually three play five. It's been a bit of a strange season for Karaka, who have been in previous years been pretty dominant, especially the last couple of years they've been quite dominant. But, you know, we've seen Admiral Maris and Pukekohe jump over the top of them this year in the ladder. So perhaps, you know, there is a couple of chinks in the Karaka armour, and Manurewa, of course, need this one to get into the playoffs for the top four. But I would still favour Karaka to win that match.
And, of course, we have Petamahoe versus Pukekohe. Now, this becomes probably important more for Petamahoe because they've probably got, looking over their shoulder, they've got Mangurewa looking at them. But Pukekohe, obviously, they would really want to probably have a win to secure second place and have a home semi. But I'm going to pick Petamahoe, not because my mate Dale Budge was involved out there, because I just think they're a very, very hard side to beat at home.
Well, up on the hill, you know, they're a very, very hard side, always been a hard side to beat at home. And playing at home against arch rivals, Pukekohe. And, you know, Petamahoe got great support from that local community up there. And I think Petamahoe will give Pukekohe a really good run today.
Absolutely. Ardmore Maris versus Bombay. Ardmore have been resurgent this season. I think they're just far too good for Bombay.
Yes, I think they'll get over the top of the boys from the hill at Bombay. Ardmore Maris have an exceptionally good year this year. They've done a resurgence here and they've done exceptionally well. And I'm picking for that to continue today.
Absolutely. Then we go bottom of the table. Well, one team's going to leave with a smile. It's Weymouth versus Papakura. Really feel sorry for both of these sides, especially
so
Weymouth.
Do I. So
yeah. Because really,
if I look at it sentimentally, after what happened to Papakura last year, I would love to see Pivakura actually get the win. And that's no disrespect at all to Weymouth, but, you know, Pivakura, one of the, you know, iconic clubs of counties, went through a pretty traumatic situation last year. Administration, I don't know what you'd call it, what went on down there last year. So, you know, I'd like to see the Pivakura boys, you know, get back into winning form.
Absolutely. Anyway, then we move on to Auckland Women's, and we have the fifth and sixth playoff. That's between Silverdale and Massey Cumu, and I'm probably going to go for Massey Cumu.
Yeah, they've had a couple of good wins this year, and this sort of very topsy-turvy, defaulting, withdrawal, messy women's competition. You know, it's really got to raise the question. I heard an interview earlier on this morning about, you know, the O-Picky competition and how everyone's getting excited about it and everything else and that, which is all wonderful. But I think they're tending to forget where things are at club rugby level for women. I really do. If we're soaking, putting this capital into the women's game and putting resources into it, etc., if we take Auckland, North Harbour and counties, well, you know, we've got eight teams collectively. Papatoa pulled out. There's teams that are pulled, changing all the time. It's just going nowhere.
I think, Kevin, at the end of the day, as I look at it, and I believe that for the biggest population in New Zealand across the three unions, it's very, very concerning. And New Zealand rugby, they need to start looking. If they're going to promote women's rugby, start going down to grassroots levels. Because that, instead of going to schoolgirls tournaments, start looking at the clubs and seeing how you can help them promote women's rugby within their club. Because believe me, from what I hear overseas, it's a lot more active there.
Well, it's interesting, and again, this is just how things happen. There's a couple of girls in the Blues O-Picky side, right, who left college last year. They haven't played any club football at all, right? They left their respective college. Now they're in the Blues O-Picky side. They're in the network, so to speak. It's not the way to go about it.
No, you're dead right, Kevin. You're dead right indeed. Anyway, we continue on for the women's competition. We have Ponsonby versus Mangarewa and College Rifles versus your beloved Maris. Ponsonby probably too good for Mangarewa on this occasion, Kevin.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah, they've been standout. The Ponsonby Follies have been the standout side all year, and I think that will continue. Yeah, you know, in the College Rivals Maris game. Well, of course, last week Maris beat College Rivals, and now they play them again in this fixture at College Rivals. Last week they played at Maris. They had a good win last week, the Maris girls, and I'm hoping that they can repeat that today. They've had an injection, I know, with one of their Blues players who's not required to play in the O-Picky today at the Navigation Stadium at Pukekohe. I know is lining up today for Maris, so that's a help for the young Maris girls. But under their new coach this year, and of course with Waisaki Satutu, I'm hoping that Maris can just get that one today over College Rivals.
Anyway, we move on to Auckland Men's Premier. So we started at the Patola Cup round, and for four teams, it's very, very important for. You know, basically, it's for your club survival, basically. And so these are the games. Manukau will take on Waitemata. Now, my heart goes out to Waitemata, our old mate Stephen Harris, who's involved there. I'd like to see them win. I'd like to see them win, but, you know, I think Manukau they've dropped off in form, but they've surprised a few this year, Kevin.
Oh, I'd love to see West Maris and Waitemata. I'd love to see them record the victory today. And I think, to be fair, I think what we've got to reflect in looking at these games is the challenges and real, real survival mode that so many clubs in Auckland are now in. I don't know whether people understand how close some clubs are sailing to the wind. There's Waitemata, one of the great clubs of Auckland, who are sitting near the bottom of the competition. Manukau, of course, won the Gallagher Shield only a few years ago, and are in that same sort of situation. So, you know, club rugby in Auckland has got major, major challenges.
And, of course, the next one is my beloved Eden versus Suburbs. I believe at times we've played some good rugby at Eden, I believe, you know, but just some silly mistakes at times. Suburbs, they've got a bit of a resurgence. They're feeling a bit resurgical, and I'm looking forward to see them all at Gribblehurst Park. Some of the great characters like Mr. Chisholm, Mr. Grayson, Mr. Donovan, and Mr. Curtis, who are a couple of good mates of mine. And I'm looking forward to seeing how this game goes. I'm hoping that we get the win.
Well, I watched Eden last week, and you know, I think from where they've come from earlier on in the season to where they are now, I think Eden have improved significantly. And I'm picking that Eden will get on top of the men from Avondale.
Good on you. You'll be invited back now. Okay, so we move on to the quarterfinals in the Gallagher Shield. University versus College Rifles and your beloved Marist versus Pakuranga. University really started off in a hiss and a roar. Their form's dropped off. Rifles, you can never underestimate them. But I'm going to be quite honest, I'm probably going to give this to University.
Well, I think the other advantage University have got today as well, and some of their super players are back, and that also will make a difference to have those players back. And I haven't actually seen the University side, but they will have a strong side against College Rivals at home, with a great support, of course. You know, no doubt that the University supporters will be out there in force today, as will College Rivals. But I would favour University to get over the top of College Rivals.
Collect more points when.
And finally, just the game which you will be interested in. It is for you. I think Marist beat Pakuranga.
I have to agree.
you weren't going to say anything else.
No, I wasn't. But in saying that, we've always traditionally, and especially the last few years, we've had some really, really tight battles with Pakuranga, no question about home and away. And I don't see today being any exception to that, but I certainly do favour Marist to come out on top. We beat Pakuranga in the round robin, and I'm picking that our boys will do the. Yeah, we've got the Cody Vyse back today, Blues Williams back playing for Marist today. And I'm picking the Marist boys will get it done today to play next week, hopefully. Well, they'd play Grammar, of course, and the winner of the University v College Rivals game will play Ponsonby.
Absolutely. Well, Kevin, thank you so much for coming in, filling in today. And you've really given us a great insight and honesty into club rugby.
Thanks. All the best, and my pleasure.
No, always a pleasure to have you on, and we will be in touch, young man.
We will indeed.
Thank you. Cheers. Okay, that was Kevin Hickland. So next up, we're going to talk to Joey Green as we look at NRL and Auckland Club Rugby League.
Neighborhood, easy as the breeze in springtime. He don't talk too much. When he does, the whole room gets luminous. Lights everywhere. He said earlier this year, he tuned down real low, searching on the hi-fi radio. And then something moved in. Never been the same since listening on the misty frequencies. He's listening on the misty frequencies. She walks real slow pace. She knows where she be going. International lifestyle control, amplified by what she knows.
knapsacks, headphones. She be stepping with that rugged flow. She powerful.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend here on Planet FM. And I have to say, just before we go any further, this is a big shout out to WaterSmart, who are proud sponsors of this segment. Weekend mission sorted, mate. Wash your car, rinse the boat station, clean the bait station, keep the wife's tomato plants all happy with a WaterSmart tank. No water restrictions, no worries, and different sizes to suit your property. Check out watersmart.co.nz and take control today. Anyway, let's get on to some rugby league. Here to join us, the old green machine himself, Joey Green. G'day, Joey. How are you?
Top of the morning, mate. It's a great weekend here in Auckland and hopefully just as good over in Brisbane as well, because no doubt it's going to be a cracker as we'll get to.
Yeah, well, obviously, no Jackson Ford. Obviously, the Warriors' fantastic performance last week in Christchurch, and I think there's a lot of talk coming out of Christchurch. I think there's in the air. There's talk of the 20th team going there, but that is for another day. But no Jackson Ford. Obviously, for the Dolphins, Katoa is back. This game is so close to call. Usually, you go the Warriors, you'd be quite confident against the Dolphins. But the Dolphins, they've been one of the form teams in the NRL.
Yeah, 100%. No Jackson Ford. Most likely until the final, should the Warriors get there as well. So that's going to be a massive loss, especially with how he's been through the first 4 months of the competition. But Canestawa Smith, we said last weekend that we could probably expect a big game from him in his hometown, and he performed like I expected him to. Brought a massive impact off the bench that night. Hopefully he gets another start this afternoon, because, geez, he, with the loss of Mitchell Barnett in 2027, he's probably a guy that could make the most of that move for Barnett to the Broncos. But this is easily the game of the round. The Dolphins, since that Anzac Day clash against the Warriors in Wellington, they haven't skipped a beat since then, and that was, pretty much their only loss in the last couple of months. So it's going to be interesting to see how the Dolphins can front up today. Isaiah Katoa comes back into the side, with how good their backline is going at the moment. Jack Bostock, Kirby Farnworth, Hamiso Tabuai-Fido. You only have to look at those three guys, let alone Salwyn Cobber and Jermaine Asako on the wing too. Adam Pompey and Leotawa are going to have a super, super tough task on their hands to be able to contain that. I think if they can win that battle out on the edges, but defensively, we know that the Warriors can score points, especially Charles Nicol-Klukstar scored 4 tries last weekend and a pretty happy outing for him. So defensively, if Pompey, Leotawa, Jacob Laban and Kurt Capel, if those guys can get their defensive reads right, it's going to see, the Warriors possibly walk away in a tight tussle. But the Dolphins, like you said, the informed team of the competition. So,
Joe, you're just going into a bad coverage area, mate. We just lost you there for a minute, but all good. Hey, Joey, just looking at some of the games that were played, obviously Thursday night, Rabbitohs 32, Eels 12 last night, Bulldogs 30 versus the Titans 12, Broncos 18, Roosters 24. That Rabbitohs-Eels match, Joey, I'll have to say Cody Walker just was outstanding.
Joey,
yeah, we're having it. Real issues. It looks like you keep on dropping out, mate. So, but keep talking. Oh. Yep.
Look, the Parramatta side, they're not going to be too happy with that matchup. The Rabbitohs, whilst they weren't at their best as well, the Rabbitohs without Latrell Mitchell, without Campbell Graham as well, they haven't looked as good of a side as they could. But Mitchell Moses, they couldn't quite celebrate that occasion for him. Whether that's riding on the wall for the remainder of the season, that remains to be seen. But the South Sydney Rabbitohs, rather, lucky to walk away with the 2 points.
Absolutely. And, of course, the Bulldogs, a bit of joy for them. Stephen Crichton probably played his best game of the season. Josh Curran was good. Really a good win away against the Titans.
Yeah, 100%. You know, that left edge change-up of Crichton moving into the 5/8 role, Josh Curran filling in that second row for now, and Matt Burton moving out to centre probably allows Burton to, you know, have some of his best traits, which is carrying the football in hand. Lachlan Galvin has looked like he's gone to another level with a new halves partner as well, and whether that, you know, helps him turn the tide for the remainder of the season remains to be seen. But credit to the Bulldogs for going up there, especially with how Gold Coast performed last weekend. They had a very gritty win over the Panthers, and couldn't quite put it into action again last night. Hopefully, the Bulldogs can build some momentum off the back of that, and off the back of that into the last 10 rounds of the season.
Absolutely, and of course. Yeah, well, the Roosters, they keep on doing what they're doing. The Sam Walker looks good. I think Broncos will probably be a little bit disappointed. They started off well, but the Roosters, they're basically, they're chasing the pack, and that is chasing Penrith.
Yeah, definitely. The Roosters finding their mojo back again last night against the Broncos side, who, as much as, you know, they've got the stars on paper, you could probably cross, you know, put the red line through their season now, and whether that means, you know, Michael Maguire does end up getting shown the door at the end of the season, who knows? But you can't really look at the Broncos now as much as either defending premiers. I can't expect them to be playing finals football in 2026, but the Roosters just keep trucking away, and Nafahu White and Spencer Lenu showing how dominant they can be when they're in form, and they're, you know, over the last 10 rounds, they're definitely going to be a side to be careful of.
Anyway, we better move on. Cowboys versus Panthers, Sea Eagles versus Storm. That first one, you probably would have to go for the Panthers in this one.
Oh, 100%. But if you look, you know, similar to the Gold Coast performance they put out last weekend, you know, the Cowboys are a very similar side on their day. They are a side who can trouble any club, but like we saw last week in the Titans upsetting the Panthers, we could see something very, very similar happening up in Townsville, but the Panthers very rarely, dropped two in a row, and I can't expect that to happen against the Cowboys side, who, coming off three straight losses, would probably expect them to see a fourth straight one.
Okay, so we go Seagulls versus Storm, probably the other game of the round.
Yeah, 100%. Battle of Brookvale always provides entertainment of some kind, whether it's on the field or a bit of, however you want to describe it. But, you know, Fosball always been the talk of the season since he's taken over. No Jerome Hughes for the Melbourne Storm, and I think that might just be a too tough a task for Melbourne to overcome, so Manly to win. But it's going to be a game to watch.
Okay, Sunday, Raiders versus Dragons, Knights versus Tigers. That first one, I think you have to say Raiders all the way, but a much improved Dragon side.
Yeah, very much improved Dragons side. And if anything, you know, like the Raiders season has been very up and down, a shadow of what they look like in 2025. I'm going to go the opposite way. I'm going to call the Dragons upset. You know, they've been looking for their second win. They're a very much improved forward pack. And I think they might snag their second win of the season.
Okay, so we go Knights versus West Tigers. The West Tigers have really dropped off a bit. Knights look really good. I have to say Dylan Brown really has reinvigorated his career there.
Yeah, 100%. Dylan Brown and Caelan Ponga, that combination just seems to be working a treat at the moment, regardless of who partners Dylan Brown in the halves, whether it's Fletcher Sharp, Sandon Smith. They just seem to, that back line is very potent and it's going to be very hard to stop, you know, this year and leading into the remainder of the season as well. The Tigers, like you said, are kind of drop off. Adam Dewey comes back into the side. Alex Twyla still missing through the middle of the field for them. and the Knights love playing on Sunday afternoon at home. I'm going to expect Newcastle to put on a spectacle tomorrow night and walk away with the 2 points.
Okay, we move on to Fox Memorial Men's Premiership. These are the games in the Auckland area for today. Bay Roskill versus Ponsonby, Mount Albert versus Papakura, Manukau versus Point Chevalier, Otahuhu versus Marist Staines.
Yeah, look, some very crucial matchups as we come in towards the last month of the Fox Memorial. Bay Roskill and Ponsonby, two sides who you probably wouldn't have thought at the start of the season would be in the top four. Bay Roskill at home, they love playing, you know, they're off-the-cuff football, but Ponsonby have a really tough forward pack, led by Dylan Tavita as well in the halves, who's been steering them around nicely. So I think that's going to be a very good game to watch, and I'm tipping that Ponsonby might snag the 2 points there. Mount Albert taking on Papakura, they've had a very up-and-down season, Mount Albert, and they're going to need to start chasing some points if they want to have any chance of making the playoffs come August. Against the Papakura side, who very similar, have also had a very up-and-down season. We know how capable they are, but they're also starting to chase their top four as well. So another great game to watch alongside the Manukau and Point Chev. Manukau sitting second place at the moment. Like Bay Roskill and Ponsonby, I don't think anyone would have been expecting them to see to be sitting in the top four, especially in second as well. Against the Point Chev side, who are very young but are still kind of in that mid and want to be inching ever closer. They lost last week to Mount Albert and will probably be trying to get one back against Manukau this afternoon. But at home and riding a bit of momentum at the moment are the Magpies. So I'd expect them to get a pretty comfortable win at Moyle Park. Otahuhu versus Marist, I don't think anyone is coming close to stopping Otahuhu through the regular season. So it's going to be a tough outing for Marist this afternoon.
Okay, we go on to the Steel Shanks Women's Premiership. Otahuhu versus Mount Albert. Manukau versus Mangere East. Manurewa versus Richmond.
Yeah, look, a couple of interesting clashes in the Steel Shanks Premiership this afternoon. Otahuhu, since their loss a few weeks ago to Richmond, have really started to claw their season back, and it's going to be a tough outing for Mount Albert this afternoon. And I'm expecting Otahuhu to get a pretty comfortable win there. Manukau taking on Mangere East. Manukau have kind of fallen away a little bit. They had a couple of good games at the start of the season, which found them a bit of momentum, but have kind of slipped off that form. And Mangere East are kind of sitting in the middle of that pack. So I'd expect that's going to be a tight one. But Mangere East will come away with the win there. And then Manurewa taking on Richmond. A couple of sides who, like we've said, over the last few weeks, Manurewa have a heap of talent on paper, but just haven't quite managed to pull out a full 80-minute performance yet. So that's going to be a tough one for them, but at home I'd expect them to walk away pretty comfortably over Richmond.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Joey. We've just done it on time, and we will catch up next week, mate.
Always a pleasure, mate, and we'll chat again next week.
Awesome. Have a great weekend. Cheers. That was Joey Green. Next up, we're going to talk some cricket with Garth Galloway.
Castro in the
Well, welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender here on Planet FM. I hope you're enjoying the show. I'll just hold on a minute while I try and play another promo. Anyway, this is brought to you by Enterprise Recruitment. Finding the right people can be hard, and so many unexpected surprises. So cut out those unexpected surprises by contacting Enterprise Recruitment. They will find you the right candidate to suit your business needs. So contact enterprise.co.nz, and they have branches nationwide. Well, we go into day three tonight in the third test between the Black Caps in England. Also, we have the White Ferns who will be playing England in the 2020 World Cup. Here to join us, renowned commentator and all-round good guy, Mr. Garth Galloway. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Eamon. I'm well, thanks. And you?
Excellent, excellent, excellent. It's been a busy old morning. Anyway, we might as well get to it right now. Well, this is the summary of the test as we head into day three. The first, New Zealand 438 all out. A fantastic opening partnership between Devin Conway and Tom Latham. Conway made 157. Latham made 151. But from there, no one kicked on. Nobody was able to put an innings of substance. Ben Stokes bowled very, very well towards that critical end of the innings with 4 for 70. In response, England are 232 for 2. Duncan made 113. Ben Pell is 74 not out, Root 21 not out. It looks like advantage England.
Yeah, it does. It does. It's in the balance. You know, it's right there. I think New Zealand will be very disappointed. You know, they set themselves high standards, as you said, a fabulous opening partnership between Conway and Latham, who both struggled for form in the series. You know, they are very good at capitalising on a flat pitch, and that was flat. And they batted, I thought, just magnificently, fantastic. And I kind of feel so pleased for Tom Latham getting 100 in England. You know, to see him, he's led the team well, and it just feels like he deserves that success. You can probably hear a few Paradise Ducks going on here in the background. I'm at Charteris Bay Golf Course, so if there's duck noise, my apologies. but I think New Zealand will feel with just Nicholls and Blundell getting into the 30s, and they really faded away with the mercurial Ben Stokes, you know, running through them a bit. I just think that they'll feel, you know, that they're short. And lost that test a few years ago at Trent Bridge, you'll remember, where they scored over 500 in the first innings,
yeah,
and then
yes,
lost it. And Tim Southey was reminding them of that in the media on the first night, and I thought Tim was being particularly cheeky, but perhaps he's got a point. England batted, I thought, very well. Duckett dropped on 8 in the slips. You know, again, New Zealand let themselves down in the field a little bit. So, yeah, I think the attack without Jameson and Henry, 23 wickets between them in the first two tests, not playing, you know, the rest for Jameson is quite a bitter pill for people to swallow, I suspect. And the attack just looks a bit toothless.
And to be honest with you, at some point tonight, Mitch Shatner needs to come in to play as our spinner. You know, I think when you look at these pitches, especially at Trent Bridge, they're basically flat. So eventually, the spinners are going to come into play. Mitch Shatner needs to really insert himself into this match pretty quickly.
Yeah, well, you saw Duckett targeting him, and you know, for bowlers bowling in Test cricket, and for all of them, but spin bowlers especially, it's about, you know, rhythm and overs, and there's no substitute for it. And unfortunately, Shatner's come from not much really in terms of coming into this series. So he hasn't got those, the sort of long spells behind him. Bashir, of course, has been playing county cricket. I've always felt that Ajaz Patel is our best spinner, but he's been, I think, poorly treated and poorly managed, really, by New Zealand over a period of years. Shatner has certainly improved, But, you know, is he going to be capable of winning us a test? I think, you know, that everybody is saying over there that because of the heat and the really oppressive conditions, that it will dry out, and it will dry out quite quickly. Today is an absolutely critical match. I think they'll look to target Santner again. You saw Duckett going after him a bit early on so that he couldn't settle. That of course, presents an opportunity for Santner if they do that. But I think, you know, when Brook gets in and co, they could really look to target some of those New Zealand bowlers. So Rourke's going to have a big workload. Tickner, of course, hit in the head by Archer, so he's been substituted by Zach Folkes, a very rare thing in Test cricket. And, you know, we saw Folkes against the West Indies over here. Again, another player probably hasn't got the runs, the work in the legs. I didn't think he looked like a test match bowler when he played against the West Indies and had to do long spells when the pitches got flat. So, you know, New Zealand are under a fair bit of pressure. And I couldn't have seen that coming after the first day with them so well placed. So they will feel, I'm sure, that they've allowed the gate to open, and they've got to create pressure on England from this first session tomorrow. They really do have to create pressure, build pressure, and they must hold their catches, Eamon, if they're to stay in the match. And they can win it from here. Make no mistake, they can win it. But they're going to have to put England under pressure and hold their catches.
Absolutely, and of course, then we go to the White Ferns. Well, they've got to do a die match against England, and the reality is, should the West Indies beat Ireland, then it's pretty much all over for them. But yep. I think they should. I'm going to be brutally honest here, Garth. I don't think they've got a chance. I think now is the time after this 2020 Cricket World Cup to reassess things, reassess the future. Obviously, there will be retirements coming into this White Ferns team. And I think we also, and this is just my personal views, I think there needs to be, especially around the coaching, I think there needs to be a reassessment around there.
I couldn't agree more. There needs to be a review done. I mean, if they don't get through, it's because they lost those games to Sri Lanka and the West Indies. They nearly lost, of course, to Ireland, yeah, as well, which was, you know, they were very fortunate to get out of that game. And, you know, this has been their history, unfortunately, with World Cup tournaments. They won that one a few years ago. I've always said it was an aberration. You know, I heard on TV the great Susie Bates saying, you know, we I want to bring out the mongrel in us. Well, I haven't seen any mongrel from this New Zealand side for years. I'd love to see some mongrel from them. That's what we're all crying out to see. But we don't. And they've been just so disappointing. You know, the game against Sri Lanka, I think there were 7 catches dropped, 3 stumpings missed. Again, you go into the next game, more catches dropped. Just inexplicable. And the Sri Lankan player who got 50 was dropped on 1 at short fine leg. Just, you know, my grandmother could have taken the catch. It was so simple. So you really do have to ask what's going on inside the camp. Wouldn't it be a miracle if they beat England and squeezed through? But I just can't see it happening. I just don't think they're good enough.
Quite frankly, yes, and I think there's, I'll be straight to the point here, Gav. I think there's been too many players that they've held on for too long. You know,
you know my views on that. Of course,
yeah,
have.
Yeah. And what I've seen is we saw Kane Williamson. He retired from Test cricket, and to me, he went out and he just said, I don't think I can give any more. He was honest. Yep. He stood down. A lot of players, I don't think, have been honest to themselves or the team.
Well, incredibly hard, but that's when managers and selectors have to make decisions for them if they won't make those decisions themselves, and we haven't seen that either. And you can imagine how hard for Williamson that would have been, a third of the way through a test series. So, look, I agree with you. One of the ironies about it, though, is that, you know, the one player, I think, who could potentially win them the game against England is Devine.
Yeah.
And, you know, don't be surprised if she comes out and scores 100. I've, you know, really enjoyed watching her without the captaincy. I never thought I'd say this, but I feel sad that she's going because she's so much more relaxed without the captaincy. She's a much, much better player. And, you know, she's one of the few players who really does bring out the mongrel and will take opposition attacks on, you know. And she won't try and play these fiddly little reverse sweeps against slow bowlers, you know, which never seem to come off. You know, the shot selection's been abysmal. So, you know, I'm sad that she's going, because I still think she's got something to offer in terms of her batting and bowling. And she's a real competitor. You know, she gets stuck in. So, yeah, I'm not completely ruling them out, but again, I just don't think that the reviews are tough enough. I don't think that, you know, that the players are tough enough on themselves. You've got a player, again, like Georgia Plummer, who just sometimes you think she's getting there. You know, she's played 87 matches for New Zealand now, averages 16 and 20 in the two forms of the game, and in the 50-over cricket has scored 137 games against Sri Lanka. You know, again, and no 50s. They're just not tough enough and hard enough on themselves, and they don't demand enough of themselves.
Absolutely. Well, on a sad note this week, the death of Bob Blair, at the age of 94, his bravery, especially after losing his partner at the time in the Tangiwai disaster, him and Bert Sutcliffe battle bouncers in South Africa, and really, while they didn't win the test, they won the hearts of not only the New Zealand public but the South African public due to their bravery, and especially for Bob Blair. You know, that was a very, very hard ask for him, and he has always been that symbol of New Zealand cricket bravery.
Yeah, and it was great to see the boys wearing black armbands to acknowledge Bob. You know, Bob played. He took over 500 first-class wickets. He was a hell of a good first-class cricketer. Played over 100 first-class games. I think his first-class bowling average was 18. You know, so those are exceptional figures. He wasn't quite so good for New Zealand, unfortunately. He played in a side throughout the 1950s that were a poor side. He played 19 tests and they lost 13 of them and drew 6. So he never played in a winning New Zealand side. But the Tangiwai disaster, you know, it's an incredible story. Christmas Eve here in New Zealand, 1953, and they played, of course, on Christmas Eve over in South Africa at Johannesburg, the second test. They took a rest day off where the news broke about what had happened in New Zealand on Christmas Day over there. And Bob Blair was ruled out of the match and said he wouldn't take any further part. He was listening to the game back at the team's hotel. And when he heard them getting into trouble, and of course Bert Sutcliffe had been hit by Neil Adcock in the head. And so Sutcliffe was swathed in bandages, you know, and Guy Overton was dismissed. So New Zealand were 9 down. And off they walked, Overton and Sutcliffe. And, of course, then Bert told me this wonderful story that he looked up and from under the tunnel, there was Bob Blair. And, you know, Bert had tears in his eyes. Bob was crying, and out they went together. And they added another 33 runs for the 10th wicket. Sutcliffe hit Tayfield, Hugh Tayfield, the off-spinner, for 7 sixes, which was just unheard of. He scored 80. Not out. Blair made 6, and they won the hearts of all of the South African and the cricketing world. But yeah, it was Narissa Love was Bob's fiance who died in the Tangiwai disaster, and it's a story of absolute tragedy, but it's a remarkable story.
Absolutely, and hopefully, well, as you know, on that sad note, we finish up. Hopefully, we have a good performance out of the All Whites, and as honorary president of New Zealand football.
You've done your homework.
I've done my homework this time. Just in case you are up at Auckland, will the honorary president open up the honorary tab to celebrate New Zealand getting through to the second round?
I'm in Christchurch, but if you bring out the red carpet for the honorary president next time I come up there, you can rest assured I'll buy you as much beer as you can drink if they beat Belgium.
Okay, no worries at all.
That's a lot of beer too.
Yeah, well, that is that would. Yeah, well, I've been told to lay off it, so I'll leave it at that. Have a fantastic day. Great chatting. Cheers, Garth. That was fantastic. I have to say, always enjoy Garth's chats. Well, World Cup footballers on Big Match, and I did have a pre, I was able to do a pre-record before coming to air with Seamus Martin, and this is brought to you by Team Thompson. Looking to buy, looking to sell, looking to get on that Auckland property market. Two people you need to get hold of, Robert Thompson and Deborah Thompson. They will get the best result for you. Robert's number is 021-737-949 and Deborah's number is 021-673-600.
Well, welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender. Well, joining us from Vancouver is the one and only, but the guy from Between Two Bears, the big guy himself, Seamus Martin. Good morning to you, mate, or good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon, Eamon. How are you going?
Mate, really good. A bit nervous, as most New Zealand football fans, probably most New Zealand sporting fans will be. Obviously, the big game against Belgium this afternoon, 3 p.m. New Zealand time. But obviously, on Monday, first 45 minutes, I think New Zealand sports fans were in ecstasy when Finn Sermon scored that goal. But then the brilliance of Mo Salah came through for Egypt, and Egypt taking that game 3-1. Just, you were at the game. Really, there would have been a lot of emotions.
Yeah, brutal reality of sport, isn't it? You know, New Zealand were flying after that first 45 minutes. I think, yeah, Sermon's header coming from a set piece was the perfect way to go ahead. And for that first 45 minutes, it looked like New Zealand were really in control. Egypt looked shell-shocked, really. I think whatever Darren Baisley had said to the boys, you know, they came out and they'd executed that well. They nullified the threats that Egypt had, and they just weren't really in the game. But you know, you go in at 45 minutes, the momentum shifts, and then Egypt came out and their class shone through. You know, players like Salah, players like Marmoush, and they took their moments in the second half. I think they really only had sort of three clear-cut chances. The second goal to go ahead off the back of, you know, quote-unquote, a foul on Ben Old, depending on which way you look at it. You know, New Zealand spent more time, it seemed, protesting to the referee that they thought they got the call wrong, whereas Egypt got on with it and went ahead. And from that moment, I think the game was lost, really. Try as they might to get a foothold back in, you could argue that maybe the changes were made a little bit too late in the piece or not the right changes, but you know, from going 2-1 ahead, Egypt were never going to let that one go, and I think that's perhaps a difference between this New Zealand side and some of the other sides that they're facing. Even you look back at the Iran game, is that when New Zealand has a chance to kill a game or be in the lead and really manage it out, we just don't seem to have that big game experience to ride it out. And I think that's maybe what will count against us today against Belgium. This Belgium side by no means is a top 10 side, as the rankings would say. They are a very, very good international side, and I think that probably will be too strong for New Zealand, but we live in hope. But I think that is just the missing ingredient. I think New Zealand are going to benefit from this World Cup experience in 4 years' time, but maybe, just maybe, it's come 4 years too early for players like Chris Wood, maybe even Costa Barbarousis, who we get to see on the pitch, and a Michael Boxall as well. So I think Belgium will have the strength to beat New Zealand today, but I'm going to the game with a fairy tale at the front of the mind and hoping that New Zealand can perform a miracle.
Absolutely. Seamus, can you see any changes to the All Whites today?
I think if there are any changes, it's probably going to be in the front third. We need to score goals. There's no two ways about that. You know, Chris Wood, unfortunately, is our best player. Fortunately, he's our best player. Unfortunately, he's also our best player, which means the focal point for the opposition is generally going to be on nullifying him. In the first game, we had someone like Elijah Just able to capitalise on that extra attention that Chris Wood was getting. Now, he's been found out as well. So, you know, those surprise attacking threats that we have seem to have disappeared now. So I'd like to see a second front runner with Chris, whether it's a Costa Barbarousis or a Ben Wayne. I don't think we will see that, though. I don't think Darren Baisley is going to go with a formation change. I think he's pretty happy with his 4-2-3-1. So we might see changes later on in the piece that are slightly different. But, you know, maybe it's a case of putting a more attacking threat like a Jesse Randall in for a Callum McCowart. But having said that, I think Callum McCowart does really good things which allow Chris Wood and Elijah Elijah Just to shine. Maybe it's a case of Sarpreet Singh having a rest and Orion Thomas being injected, but I don't think there's too much different coming off the, you know, coming into a starting 11 if we do shuffle the pack there. I don't think we've got a real joker in the pack to really change the way we play. I think it'll be a case of, if he does change the personnel, it'll be quite similar, like-for-like changes.
And, of course, Belgium, they have threats everywhere, Kevin De Bruyne, and, you know, we saw how a class player like a Mo Salah was able to take New Zealand apart, and let's be quite honest, the threat really does come from De Bruyne.
Yeah, and Jeremy Docker was another one who, you know, he's been in the headlines about the birth of his first child. That's now happened. He's joined the squad again and able to be considered for selection. I think he might start off the bench. But it has been a World Cup where the teams, you know, big players have stood up in big moments, and I think De Bruyne, maybe it's his chance today. They're an ageing side, this Belgium team. The golden generation, as they call it, are into the sunset of their time, and maybe for them as well, it's a World Cup too far. They've missed their opportunity to really shine, but that they should, by rights, go through to the final 32 out of this Group G that New Zealand find themselves in as well. I think De Bruyne will be central to that.
Absolutely. Well, just looking at the World Cup, Seamus, it's, you know, you've been to a number of World Cups. How have you found the experience in this World Cup?
Massive difference between our United States experience and our Canada experience. In the United States, we were based in San Diego. There were no games being played there, and it really was quite flat. You come here to Vancouver, where, you know, we've had the Australians roll through town, the Turkish roll through town. Of course, Canada have played here against Qatar, New Zealand versus Egypt, Canada against Switzerland, and now New Zealand against Belgium. So not only the teams that are playing games here in Vancouver, but also every night, every day, you've got this multitude of matches, and you've got people wearing the jerseys of their home country, proud to be part of, you know, the global football community, and really embracing the excellent action that we've seen on the pitch as well. So it really has been phenomenal. The grandstands have been full. Football fever is alive and well. And it, you know, it takes me back. The first World Cup I went to was Germany 2006, and that was a real celebration as well. This World Cup feels exactly the same way. Certainly in Vancouver, where we're based, I know there's other cities across the United States, perhaps, where it's not exactly the same height, but, you know, Canada really is adopting these nations that are visiting, and also Canadians are really putting on their colours as well.
Oh, awesome. Anyway, we talk about Auckland FC, as we spoke last weekend, more departures. Danny Hay will be joining Steve Corica at Yokohama Mariners. Also, it looks like Lou Vistrata will be joining Yokohama Mariners. The rumours going around, Liam Gillian, it looks like his move to West Sydney Wanderers is going to happen. So it's interesting times. I believe Nick Becker is over in is over at the World Cup at the moment. So it's going to be interesting time for Auckland FC as we look ahead towards another A-League season.
Yeah, bumped into Nick Becker in the hotel actually yesterday afternoon, and sort of made a passing remark that is he up here interviewing a potential coach for Auckland FC for next season. He laughed it off, but you never know who he's meeting up here. But yes, he is here in town. No surprise to me that Gillian has moved on. He didn't really get, you know, the chances that perhaps he himself had wanted. So it's a good move for him going to Western Sydney Wanderers as well. But yeah, look, it's going to be a very different Auckland FC that line up in the A-League for next season. All change. It seems like the only one coming through the door at the moment is Lockie Bayliss, so joining... joining the club, but there's a long way to go before the season kicks off. It's the longest pre-season in world football, so while we do have the Tottenham Hotspur game coming up, and I'm sure they'll have a temporary coach in charge for that game, I don't think Auckland FC fans will need to be too worried. I'm sure whatever comes in will make sure that the rebuild is done efficiently and effectively to make sure they're still competitive in that competition.
Just looking at it, you could possibly see a Luke Casserly coming in as temporary coach for that Tottenham Hotspur game, but possibly he may join the coaching squad.
Yeah, I think Casserly is the logical choice to take the reins for that team. I did see, if you want to start the speculation, I did see Des Buckingham on his social media boarding a flight coming New Zealand, so you never know. Maybe he's got an interview with Terry McFlynn, or you know, all the powers that be there at Auckland FC.
Well, I'm going to give you a spoiler. I am arranging through Ian Benner, who I think is one of the best media officers, not only in football but in sports in general in this country, and so I will be emailing Ian to possibly be speaking with either Terry or Nick during the week. So if I see these, I'll pass on your regards, Seamus.
Yeah, make sure you do that. I sent him a cheeky message myself. He's not replied to it. I assume he's still winging his way to New Zealand as it stands, but that might just be a coincidence, or there might be more to it. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Well, there may not. There may also be another job. That's all I'll say. But we won't go into that as we still have a game to go. Anyway, we go to Northern League. And these are the games in the Northern League men's. East Coast Bays versus Tauranga. We have Auckland City FC versus Western Springs. Bay Olympic versus Fencibles. So those first three games. Obviously, we'd go for ECB over Tauranga City.
Yeah, I think East Coast Bays are, again, they're stall out pretty solidly in this Northern League, and they have good form at home. I think for Tauranga City, that long away trip, even longer given that the kickoffs have been shifted to allow the fans to take in the All Whites game, so that one kicking off at 5 p.m. Is going to be a difficult one.
And then we go Bay Olympic versus Fencibles, and to be quite honest with you, this one here, to me, it looks like it's... this one here, I think Fencibles just too good. Obviously, they're fighting to stay in that top four for National League qualifications.
Yeah, they're hanging in there, aren't they? Them and Auckland United on 25 points. Fencibles just with the advantage. They've been really good this season. I think they'll win that one. Bay Olympic really struggling down at the foot of the table together with Tauranga, Melville and Manukau United. So I'm tipping Fencibles for that one.
Eastern Suburbs versus Birkenhead. Can anyone's obviously Birkenhead, and I'll be straight to the point, they are the champions in waiting of the Northern League, but Eastern Suburbs, they've been fantastic this year, and could they cause a bit of an upset by beating Birkenhead?
I don't think so. I think Birkenhead are a freight train that are just rollicking towards the title. They're 40 points. They're 13 points ahead of Eastern Suburbs, who are in second. So while on paper this is first versus second, I think there's a golf in class, and Birkenhead will win that one.
Then we go to Auckland United versus Melville. Auckland FC Reserve versus Manukau. Sorry, have I got it wrong?
No, you're right. I was just going to say, I think Auckland United versus Melville will be a draw.
I was just about to say that. I love your consistency, Seamus. And I have to say, I've been looking at your tips as well, too, overseas. It's good to see that the Planet FM curse has hit between two posts. Auckland FC Reserve should beat Manukau.
Yeah, they should, by rights, they should. Despite the off-field stuff that's happening with Auckland FC as a club, I think they're still too strong for Manukau United, who are languishing down in 12th place with just 4 points, one win, and a draw to their name so far.
Okay, in the Northern League Women's, we had a game last night. Good win for West Coast Rangers, 2-1 over Fencibles. Now, there's only two games this weekend. It's your mob Melville versus FC Tauranga, and I'm picking them to win. Western Springs versus Ellerslie.
Yeah, Melville United to beat Tauranga in a Waibop derby there. I think at home, maybe just a little bit too strong for Tauranga. Ellerslie, for me, will dispatch Western Springs quite comfortably. Auckland United, of course, are over at the OFC Women's Champions League in the Solomon Islands, representing New Zealand in that competition. I think they'll comfortably bring that trophy home again. So, yeah, just the three matches in the Women's Premier League this week.
Absolutely. Well, I've got to say this, Seamus. I really hope the journey, and for New Zealand football, and yourself and Steve, and the great job you and your team are doing for Between Two Posts continues. On a selfish reason, it'll be great to catch up with you next week live in New Zealand, but I really hope that you've enjoyed the experience, and we've enjoyed watching what you and Steve have done for in Between Two Posts. I think it's been great.
Yeah, it's a bizarre one, isn't it? By the time the episode airs today, the result from the game would have been known. So we get into this weird situation where we're recording an episode where we don't know the outcome. So there will either be two more episodes, or, as you rightly point out, we'll be here for a little bit longer. The romantic in me suggests we'll be here for a little bit longer, but the pragmatist in me suggests that it'll be two episodes, and then we'll be winging our way back to New Zealand and landing early hours of the morning on Tuesday.
Well, Seamus, thank you so much. I know it's been, obviously, for both of us trying to work out time frames, obviously, internet connections and Wi-Fi, and whatever that has happened. When you've been overseas, you've made yourself available. I really appreciate this. And I have to say, and a lot of people who listen to this show have actually said, isn't it great that to have that lovely bloke, Seamus Martin, they're not talking about me, obviously, because I'm not a lovely bloke, but that goes on air with you and talks football live from the World Cup.
Oh, it's very kind. Yeah, like I said, happy to bring the action, and you never know, maybe we've got one more episode in us. We'll see how we go.
Well, we hope and pray. I can hear you've probably got somebody who needs to have a bit of a chat here just in the background. And so...
they're actually they're geared up, ready to head home as well. So regardless of the result today, these two we're always heading back. So yep, we'll pack them up and send them on their way, and they'll find out sort of somewhere across the Pacific Ocean if I'm joining them in a couple of days' time, or whether I'm extending for a bit longer.
Seamus, all the best for today, and thank you so much. Cheers.
Thanks, mate.
And that was Seamus Martin. I hope the audio was good. I had to make a few arrangements, so apologies if it sounded a bit low there. But anyway, we move on next on to tennis with former Davis Cup captain Jeff Simpson as we preview Wimbledon.
Into a better place and live your life. Hold your head up high and don't rely on anyone else. Make it easier on yourself and don't ask why.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. Well, we get to this part is we're talking a bit of tennis and Wimbledon comes up. And the reason it means so much to us in New Zealand, we have a great heritage, Anthony Wiley winning two Wimbledons. Chris Lewis made the final in 1983. Oni Parron was always consistent in making a quarter final. We look at the women's draw. We look at the likes of Ruia Morrison. We look at the likes of Lulu Sung in recent years. We look at our doubles players like the Michael Venuses, like the Downs and Greenhills. And of course, Aaron Routledge, here to talk to us. He is the godfather of New Zealand tennis, and he's the former Davis Cup captain, former top 100 ATP player. Jeff Simpson, good morning to you.
Good morning, Aaron. How are you this morning?
Yeah, really good. I'm rattled off a few names in which I've had, yeah. You know, a bit of... I suppose it's a bit of nostalgia when we look at Wimbledon and the New Zealand connection. And I know that you've played at Wimbledon and you know what it's like to play there, the experience, and what a fantastic tournament it is. And it's out of all the Grand Slams, it is the premium tournament to me, and it always will be, Jeff.
No, you're exactly right there. It's very exciting. It, you know, because we've had a, in New Zealand, we had a grass court history. And so Wimbledon was always the one. And, you know, we used to wake up early in the morning, listen to it over the BBC or whatever it was back in New Zealand.
Was, it,
and,
was that on shortwave, was it?
Yeah. But then we'd wait for the newspaper to come out and they'd list all the first round and second round and third round results. And, you know, we'd go through them all, and it was, you know, it was an exciting time for us, especially us younger guys that, you know, dreamed of playing there. And as you mentioned, you know, the likes of Oni Power and Chris Lewis, of course, making the final, which was an incredible, incredible effort. And, you know, we've had the likes of Kelly Evans and Brett Stevens, my brother Russell, you know. Even I made this last 31 years. So, you know, we've, you know, and that's just the men. The women have done it, you know, as well. So, yeah, it's always been a big historical part of New Zealand tennis, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Well, we start off on the women's draw, and as I just said, I had a few technical issues today, but this becomes more of a, is my pronunciation. So, we look at Sabalenka, really looks like the person to beat in this, Rabalinka and Swiatek, obviously the top three seeds. We look at the US, Pegula, Anna Somoza, and Coco Gauff. Really, this one is going to be very, very interesting.
Yes, it is. It's like, you know, we saw quite a lot at the French Open in the sense of, you know, you see your number one player in the world, like Sabalenka, and she's, you know, she's up a step in 5-3, and then she goes and loses, you know, like 10 games in a row. And you just wonder, you know, like, she's number one in the world, that how that could happen. And this proves that she is human. She does feel the pressure. And, you know, that's part of, that's what we love about sport. Anything can happen. You wouldn't have bet £1 million that would happen in that match, you know. And, so these things do happen. It's the same with Sinner, you know, up 2 sets to love by one and loses 24 straight points. And you think, wow, number one player in the world doing that, you know. So as we go into this, we can look at our facts on paper. We can look at everything like that. But there's always somewhere in these draws, and always somewhere on either the men's or the women's, that you're going to get another one of those. So that's what sport's about, and especially tennis. And that's what makes it really, really interesting. Especially this year, because we don't have that Alcaraz in there. And, you know, I must say, I'm going to miss him, because, you know, I really enjoy the way he plays. I love the way he prowls around the court. He's the hunter, and, you know, he comes up with all this different stuff, and kind of like taken over from Roger in a way, you know, because Roger was very eloquent, and, you know, you never knew what he was going to do either. He was serving and bowling, he's serving, staying back, he's coming in, and, you know, he keeps his opponents on edge the whole time. And so, yeah, I will miss the likes of Alcaraz in this tournament, but it's still, as I say, a very, very competitive tournament. And on paper, yes, Sinner's had a little time off, and, you know, he does play well at Wimbledon. The court suits him, and so you'd have to say he is the favourite at this stage. Then you've got to take your hat off to Zverev. He fought through the demons and the French, and, you know, got there in the end, got his grand slam. So that may give him a lot more confidence in himself. So, you know, those two guys are looking, you know, the ones at the moment.
Just looking at that Mensah. I think he's a guy to watch. He is definitely going to be the big mover this year.
Yeah. Well, I hadn't come to those guys yet, and those are the sort of the up-and-comers. As we saw, they all performed, you know, Fonseca, Mensah, Cabolli, even Keane, Jodar. These are the young guys. These guys are 20 years of age, and they're performing very well at a high level now. And the more experience they get in these tournaments, especially the Grand Slam, you're going to see them coming on, you know, like... There's no question in, you know, 2 to 3 years, they're going to be real threats, and maybe one will break through earlier than that. But they certainly show what they have got, and they certainly show that they are capable. And again, it makes it interesting to see, you know, who's going to put their hand up first.
Absolutely. And of course, this, we always say this, this is Novak's last dance.
Yeah, and, you know, he's actually, you know, he's actually in the top half. So he does, if he did progress, he would run in the center in the semi-final. That would be interesting. You know, you just can never, you can never write him off. And because it would be, in a lot of ways, it would be great to see him get the 25. But, you know, whether he has retained enough to do that, I don't know. You know, it depends on his draw and depends on how he goes through. But he's certainly capable of, you know, if he ever gets in that position again, he's certainly one that's capable of pulling it off. And, you know, nothing would surprise me with that guy, to be honest.
Yeah, what and I think it would be a lovely way for him to, you know, leave Wimbledon, leave it on top. And I think that's just, while we look realistically at this, we look at some of the top players that are there. I think it's that sentimental value of what, you know, Novak Djokovic, he's come from that great era where we had the likes of the Federers, Nadals and the Murrays.
Yeah, he has. He's one of, well, he's the one that has stood out the most. And, you know, he's, you know, they keep count, as they say, by grand slams, and he does have the most at 24. And that alone is, in itself is an incredible effort, you know.
Yeah. Anyway, we get to the Kiwi interests, and of course, Michael Venus and Brumbry, they're in the doubles competition. You know, Michael has had some mixed forms. They've had some mixed forms coming into the tournament, but you know, I know that Michael really excels on this, on the grass courts and doubles.
Yes, he does. He's made a final, and you know, they have, yeah, their form has been mixed a little bit, but the doubles is, today, if you look at it, is very, very competitive, and it's very tough because now you've got a lot of the top 100 men playing doubles as well. So that's making it even deeper. But Michael, you know, I know Michael very well, and he's certainly capable, if they, you know, if they get together on the day, of, you know, progressing deep into the tournament.
Absolutely, and I think Michael, he's really been a great ambassador, 38 years of age, just still doing it. It's fantastic to watch.
Oh, it is.
And doubles players, they can go into their 40s. This is how good the doubles, this is how good some of these doubles players are. Then we speak about Erin Routledge. She and her partner, they've been seeded four for this tournament. And, you know, Melser Martinez, and, you know, they haven't really come into any form. The form has been very, very mixed, but you know, I really think it's possibly for Erin, she really wants to actually make a breakthrough. She's still one of the best doubles players in the world.
Yes, she certainly is. And you know, whenever you change partners, you know, it takes a little while to develop that you know, relationship with your partner and combination and getting to know each other. So I think the more they play, they seem to play, when they play well, they seem to play good together. So, you know, she's, as you said, one of the best doubles players out there. And even if this one, you know, this combination doesn't work as well, she'll be able to find somebody different. But, you know, at the moment, I think they're doing well enough to say, you know, they've got to give it, a continual shot. I think they've still got to keep working on it. But, yes, they do definitely show the possibility of going deep as well.
Yeah, and that would be so good because, you know, we do have a, I suppose in many ways we do have a really good, we do have a great history at Wimbledon, and some of the personal memories for me, and I know for yourself, when we look back, is obviously the time of 40-odd years ago with Chris Lewis, but even time with Lulu Sun making a quarterfinal.
Yeah, that's always, you know, it's always great to see that happen. And, you know, as I said, you know, just adds to the history. But, you know, with Chris Lewis, you know, making the final that year, it's certainly a, you know, a high point in all of our lives from New Zealand that followed tennis, that's for sure.
Yeah, and of course it's just that tradition. I love the tournament. I think it's still one of the if you ever have a chance to go, if there's any tournament you want to go to, it's got to be Wimbledon. God, that's bucket list territory. Jeff. For someone like me, you've been there many times.
Yeah. No, I tell you what, it is actually better than you expect when you go there. It, you know, everything is better. You know, the history,
and how the English do it is you know, it's like first class. They do everything like that so well, and that tournament just keeps getting better every time, you know, you go there. So it is definitely a bucket list if you haven't been, you know.
Oh, certainly is. Well, Jeff, thank you so much for making yourself available. I didn't actually stumble through my words when I spoke about pronouncing some of the players. You know, maybe I might get an award for that, because usually I butcher and it's embarrassing because you get a lot of stick. Oh, you didn't pronounce that. And you're thinking, oh, okay. Do you want to get behind here? Do you want to get behind the mic and do this? That's what I would say to them. But no, in all seriously, Jeff, thank you very much. We'll catch up in a couple of weeks' time as we head towards the finals of Wimbledon. And you have a wonderful weekend, Jeff.
Okay. Thank you, Eamon.
Cheers. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me on.
Cheers, bye. That was Jeff Simpson. So next up, we've got the panel with Graham Beasley, Sports Freaks Graham Beasley, and Matt Buck.
Let your love wash over me. Oh yeah. Over river, mountains high, watch it drifting through the sky. Tide rolls out, tide rolls in. Let your love inside begin to grow. Let it bloom into something new.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender. Well, I have to say, you know, I've been living in Auckland so long, and one of the first pubs I ever went to was the Horse and Trap in Mount Eden, and you guess what, it's still going today, and it's still one of the real good pubs. It has daily food and drink specials, and the food and drink are wonderful. The service is fantastic. They also have a wonderful function room, which I've been able to attend. My brother actually had the wedding downstairs in the function room, and I've been to a number of functions there, so it's fantastic. So if you're looking for your local in Mount Eden, it's close to the Mungawhai train station, which will start very, very soon for CRL, get to the Horse and Trap, 3 Enfield Street. Their number is 09630 3055, or you can email them info@horseandtrap.co.nz. Well, today on the panel, I've decided to put myself through it, a bit of capital punishment. Here to join us on line one, he runs a very very, very good sporting and betting website, and you hear him on so many platforms, whether you hear him on Sports Nation, he's been on with Martin Devlin on his podcast, well known to the former Radio Sports days. Graham Beasley, how are you?
I'm well, yourself?
Good, good,
Wedge,
good.
I'm cold, but I'm well.
And online on the number two of the Capital Punishment, he's well-known broadcaster, and well-known broadcaster, also a real proud club rugby man from Maris and Pats in Wellington. Matt Buck, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very well, and it's, as Graham said, morning to you, Graham. It's very cold in Wellington. We've had a horrible probably 48 hours, and it's still blowing a gale. Unfortunately, well, fortunately for the Premier Men's and Women's competitions in Wellington, they're the only competitions running today. The rest of club rugby has been cancelled. And I think in probably a first, Graham, I don't know whether you know, even first 15 rugby in the Wellington region was cancelled as of yesterday, so, and first 11 football. So, yeah, the weather has come in. It's cold and drizzly, but just on a side issue, club rugby last week, Maris and Pats had a very resounding win, 15-14, over Graham's OBU. So I'll get that one in early, Graham.
By 1 point, yeah, with an iffy ref that had... There were three of our players in the bin at one stage.
Yeah, well, you know what, Matt told me he has a great relationship with the referee, so just be aware of this, Graham. You know, he's well known for it. Anyway, we might as well head to it right now. The All Whites versus Iran, do or die. Monday really had a fantastic 45 minutes, but really was undone by the brilliant Mo Salah. And then we look at Belgium. There's so many good players, including Kevin De Bruyne. And when you look at this, really, we hope that an upset can happen. In reality, I personally can't see it, but I'm going to start off with you, Graham.
We are certainly up against it. One thing I will say about this side, I mean, even though that 2010 Ricky Herbert side in South Africa was so good, and what they achieved was still amazing, they were a very defensive side. At least this time around, we've actually played quite a lot of football, especially in the first half against both Iran and Egypt. It's fallen apart a bit towards, we have led games three times so far in this tournament. So that's a bit of a first. We've scored more goals than in our previous two appearances in the finals. So that's a positive. But, yeah, we're up against Belgium, which are a class apart. The one thing I will say is a little bit in our favour is that this Belgian side, which has been so strong over the last 10 years, I think they ranked number two in the world at one stage, they are all starting to age with De Bruyne and Lukaku and Alderweireld, etc., that have held that side together over the last 10 years. They're all sort of in their mid-30s now. So there is that little sort of glimmer of hope, but they are in a different class and we are up against it. But at least we don't have to make the choice between playing sport this afternoon or staying at home and watching the All Whites because it's all been cancelled in Wellington.
Absolutely. Bucky, what's your feelings on today's match?
Yeah, I'm a bit like Graham. I've been proud of the way New Zealand has put their best foot forward at this tournament and, as you said, led in three games. They've scored goals in all games, the two they've played. I just wonder that whether the coach is going to the bench early enough. I think today against a team like Belgium, although they're ageing, as Graham said, I wonder whether if we're trying to play the brand of football we want to, then he probably needs to use more of his squad than he's currently using. So, look, I think it'll be a dream. But as they said on the news just before when I was driving across to Miramar, Graham, it could be all over by tea time, the All Whites World Cup campaign. But I think best of luck to them, and I hope they get the job done today.
Absolutely. And when I look at it, and I just heard what both of you have just said, I believe that this all-white side, and world football has actually got better. It's actually been a brilliant old tournament, to be honest, with both years. And I think New Zealand's shown a lot of promise. There'll be a lot of players there who may be looking to get bigger and better contracts out of their guys.
And they should do. And I think this side will actually be better in 4 years' time. Okay, yep. They won't have Chris Wood then, I'd imagine. But, a lot of the side are quite young. They're not particularly experienced. And, you know, I think, as you say, some of them are going to pick up other contracts. I'd imagine that Eli Just, for example, will be leaving Motherwell. I think he'll find greener pastures after his performances so far. So, yeah, hopefully he gets picked up by a big club. It doesn't need to be an English club, just sort of anywhere in Europe, really. And we can grow from there because, you know, the core of the side is still quite young and they would be better for this because the problem the All Whites have is that they only really play meaningful games once every 4 years. And that's, you know, that's not to talk down Fiji and all that kind of stuff. All their other games are friendlies and there is something different with a meaningful game like they're going to get today.
Absolutely, and just your thoughts on signing this off, Bucky. Obviously, we look at some of these players. Elijah Just probably, yep, maybe going to Celtic. Finn Sermon may, rumour has it that they have a few clubs in the English Championship buzzing around him and his agent at the moment.
Well, it is just a greatest shot window, isn't it, the World Cup? All the greatest players are there. You're playing against the best, and if you perform against the best, you're going to get noticed and picked up. So good luck to them. I think it's important that New Zealand football has many players playing around the world in the best leagues in the world, which makes a stronger All Whites team. So, yeah, you hope these guys get the credit they deserve.
Absolutely. Well, Dave Rennie, he named his first All Black squad of the year. And you know what? Generally it's gone down well. A lot of All Blacks squads in the past, there's always been a bit of controversy. I know you guys in the capital won't be happy with the omission of Duplessis Corriffy, but what's your feelings on this All Blacks, first All Black side of the year, Bucky?
Oh, I don't think he pushed the boat out too much, and I don't think the selectors pushed the boat out too much. I was interested that Corriffy didn't make it after the campaign. He couldn't do much more, but he is limited to that. He's a genuine number 7 and 7 only. But I felt that his performance against Cigna in the Blues game, he put Cigna to bed pretty early in that game, and he put Jacobson to bed very early in the final, that yes, he was playing against playing with a very good forward pack, but he couldn't do much more. So I was surprised in those selections. I was surprised Finau didn't make it ahead of Parker. Kyle Preston, they see something in him. As we all know, that said every time he plays, he can kick off both feet. And that's a third halfback, I think, because Roygaard is one and his daylights are two and three. So, there wasn't any surprises, probably except for that Corriffy one. But again, they take another 10 players to Africa, so I would be very surprised, Graham, if Corriffy wasn't on that plane. And I don't know where they're going to get the other 10 players from, because they do take quite a few on tour these days.
I'll tell you what, what's your feelings on that, Graham? Because, you know, you have a look, Duplessis Corriffy just missed out. Obviously, a lot of, there is a lot of players, and a lot of believe Bowden Barrett shouldn't be there, but that's just, that is just purely opinion. But what's your feelings on this, Graham?
Yeah, well, I think that when we get to the Tour of Africa, they add another 10 players. 44 are going there. So if you're a professional rugby player in New Zealand,
I might even get a run.
then you're feeling a bit missed out. So I would expect that Duplessis Corriffy will make that tour, and I would actually expect him to be the captain of the Dirt Trackers, of the midweek side, which actually holds almost as much interest for me as the test for that series. You know, it's good old school stuff. Midweek, we're playing the Sharks and the Stormers and all that kind of stuff. And I'm they're going to be really tough games. So I'm going to be interested to see how the team goes there, because I think that's really looking forward to next year with the World Cup. It's a good way of blooding players, etc. An interesting comment about Preston I heard, and I can't remember who said it, is that one of the reasons they picked him is they saw him as a specialist impact player off the bench. And because he's been playing off the bench for the Crusaders for the majority of the season, they sort of see him as a specialist off the bench player. So that's kind of an interesting approach. But he is quality, and you know that, Bucky, he's absolute quality. So, but apart from that, I thought they were conservative with their selections. It's kind of seemed a little bit like a Scott Robinson selected side, actually.
Yeah, well, I'm just going to say this, Bucky, just in your point, you know, if you're Dave Rennie, if you're going to pick on form, you pick Ruben Love at first 5'8".
Well, you do, because, again, completely outplayed Damien McKenzie on Saturday night, but what Hurricanes played and outplayed their opposition number. Look, you can say it's been picked on form if you look at someone like Xavier Neumea. 11 Hurricanes, 11 Chiefs. If you throw Anton Leonard-Brown into the mix, I found that selection maybe a bit strange. But anyway, Rico Ioane will come back in. Look, as I said, it is what it is. And well, I just hope they find some form that they didn't have towards the end of last year, this All Black team, because a lot went wrong last year, and they've had a big clean-out, and it's time for them to put some performances on the park. What Graham is upset about, which we've left out of this conversation, is that Callum Harkin from Old Boys University didn't make it. I know Kyle Preston from Old Boys University did, but he had Harkin probably captaining the side, did Graham. So, unfortunately, yeah, he didn't make it. I felt fine with Graham when the team was selected.
Well, we might as well get on to this right now, because when I rang up Graham, he said, please don't forget to speak about the best rugby team in the world. And I said, are we talking about the Crusaders? And I got a very grumpy answer back. But I'm going to have to say, I've been saying it for a while, you guys, the Hurricanes are the finished article. And they proved it last weekend, 60-5 over the Chiefs. I think a lot of credit hasn't been given to the Hurricanes on the way they've played that final, the way the consistency all season. Your thoughts on the final, Graham?
Well, it's just a brand of rugby that the Hurricanes played all throughout. It took it to a new level. And Super Rugby over the last sort of 5 to 10 years has been a little bit dull at times. And we've seen the Crusaders just churn out title after title. And even when it got broken up and the Blues won it a couple of years ago, that was pretty sort of turgid rugby as well. Yeah, very forward dominated. Now, the Hurricanes did have a very good forward pack this year. And having Dearns added to the side just, was the icing on the cake, if you like, of that forward back, who were very good. But they just used it back so well. They were so cohesive. I think Jason Holland probably deserves a lot of credit for the way that the backs put it all together and just played with such confidence and the whole way they played. To win all three playoff, to score over 50 points in all three playoff games was pretty special, really. They scored over 16, two of them. And, I genuinely think that there's an argument that they were the best Super Rugby team of the duration of the tournament, over the last 30 years. The only team that would come close to them, for me, would be the early Blues side that won the first three competitions, because they played well as well. But, you know, this Hurricanes team just had everything.
I would have to agree with you. I wouldn't say they're the best team in 30 years. I think there'll be a few people from down in a certain place in the South Island. But, Bucky, you're on the sideline watching it. Some of the play was brilliant. When you're watching a prop forward passing a ball to a winger, better than most second fives have passed the ball to a winger in Super Rugby this year. It was brilliant to watch.
Oh, it was brilliant to watch, and I think what Graham's saying, if you put that team on the park against any other team over the 30 years, it would be a very close match. I mean, they across 1 to 15, even 1 to 23, they played superbly. A couple of things, Graham mentioned Jason Holland. Jason Holland and Warner Dearns fell into the Hurricanes' lap, basically. I heard an interview with Dearns. He originally was going to go to Europe. Eddie Jones said, get away from Japan for a year. He finished up with the Hurricanes. That fell in his lap. And the other one is, of course, Jason Holland will be at the Blues next year. Cohesive, very well coached. I think Clark Laidlaw has a lot. There's a lot of people out there now who are saying, geez, he can coach, and I wonder whether he's looking at higher honours, whether it's here or overseas again. And I just think they played a great brand of football. I was just about to say, in 2016, when they won it last time, they didn't concede a try in that final series. And then you flip it to this one, they scored so many tries. So those two teams, 2016, 226, fantastic rugby teams. And I think the Hurricanes deserve all the bullets they get. One thing I would say, and I don't know whether you picked up on it, Graham, I thought the tournament itself this year was so-so, right? And I say that in that the Chiefs and the Hurricanes very, very early on were the two best teams in the comp. But if you look at the final, the Hurricanes put the Chiefs away so badly that it actually was finished up being a bit of a one-horse competition. So I didn't think overall the competition was great this year. The Hurricanes were, but I don't think the rest of the competition was up to a great standard.
Yep, what's your feelings on that, Graham?
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair call, and obviously the competition does have issues. It's down to 10 teams next year, you know, so we lost the Rebels a couple of years ago. We lose Moana Pacifica now. It does have issues, and it has issues across the Tasman as well. I think one reason, you know, that Bucky's point is true, is that the Brumbies had an off-season. I mean, normally it's the big New Zealand sides and the Brumbies, and at least, you know, you get a semi-final in Australia or something like that. But for the four semi-finalists to be New Zealand teams makes it a bit lopsided. I don't know how to address that. I think the Highlanders also need to look at themselves and their recruitment. I mean, obviously, they do need to get players from outside that region because it's so small from a population point of view. So they probably need to work out what they are doing, and Australia as well. And I feel sorry for the Reds, to be honest, because they've got Vern Cotter coaching them next year, and I don't think that's going to really improve them.
Do you feel sorry for the Crusaders?
No, never.
I was waiting for that. Anyway, we move on. Graham, netball, the Mystics will be playing the Southern Sting in the ANZ Premiership Final tonight here in Auckland. Obviously, there has been some talk, came through the Herald, that the Mystics are threatening to leave unless the TV deal is sorted out for next season, possibly looking in 2028 to hopefully join the Australian competition. Far off, Sky TV has now committed to the Silver Ferns. They are potentially looking at TV rights either through Sky or through TV Free.
Yeah, the Mystics, that's an interesting call, isn't it? I hope they're not cutting off their nose to spite their face, because if they do leave and join the Australian competition, then that's going to make the TV rights even harder to sell, because, you know, it'll result in a lesser product. So yeah, I hope they tread carefully there. I think they're sort of talking about still putting a team up here, is that right? So they're sort of their top team will play in the Australian competition, and they'll have a youth team, whatever, playing in the New Zealand competition. But that sort of seems a bit demeaning in itself. So, no, I'm kind of behind the Southern Steel tonight. I mean, I think that they're up against it, a bit like the All Whites, but I think it'd be quite good if they won it, actually. It sort of seems to be like the heartland of netball in the country.
Bucky, what's your thoughts on this?
Oh, look, I'm reading it a bit like what Graham said. I think they want to put a sort of a team, like, I suppose if you look at the Phoenix or the Auckland FC model, they want to put their top team in the A-League or the Australian League, and they want to put their next team down in a Northern or a Central League competition in football. So that's what the netballers want to do. Whether they've got the playing depth to start with is a big thing. Netball, to me, at the moment in New Zealand, is broken. I think there's the Commonwealth Games is coming along. I mean, they need a sugar hit there, and what I mean by that is they need to go close to winning it, because that Nolene Taro thing last year was terrible. And I just think netball needs to get back to, as Graham said, it's the Southern Steel win. I think that's a good result for netball, because that's where the roots of netball have been for a long time. It's great to see Wendy Frew now coaching the team. She's been a winner with the Southern Steel. But I think there's, over the next year or so, a lot's got to go right for netball. And I think sending a team to Australia is not the right thing.
Anyway, we move on. Bucky, you're going to disagree with me on this. I watched the Warriors in Christchurch last week, and since after that game, the talk and the drums are rolling, and it's sounding like the South Island are the favourites for that 20th NRL team. I believe it's got to happen. Denying the South Island is kind of like denying climate change. But at the end of the day it looks as though it may happen. And when you see key people who I can ring up and they will always have a chat, not being able to speak to me, kind of a bit like used to, you probably think we don't have 20 minutes in our life to speak to this guy. But really, this is looking pretty much dead on at the moment, Bucky.
Yeah, look, I don't know. I'm not a rugby league administrator, and I don't want to be. But I listen to quite a few podcasts from Australia, and if I look at a journal, like there's the Rothfield, the Buzz Rothfield, the guys from NRL 360, these sort of guys, they're all saying that there needs to be now, after the, where the Warriors have been and are going in Christchurch and all that, the new stadium, the best thing the NRL could do, and they're saying it, not me, these guys from Australia, there needs to be a franchise in the South Island of New Zealand. That, they're the same fact. Do it now. It, you know, get it done. I know they're going up to Papua New Guinea. That sounds very, very strange indeed. They're going to Western Australia. I think the NRL will just make it happen. I don't think they'll wait for the council to pay, or this person to pay, or this person to put their hand up. They'll just make it happen. The one person I don't want involved in the Christchurch franchise is that bloody David Moffat bloke, I'll rent a quote, who seems to put his nose in where it's not welcome. And if there is a Christchurch NRL team, I don't want him involved, because I think it'll be at the detriment of the franchise.
Well, I don't believe he is withdrawn, just to let you know. So it looks like it's Graham Lowe.
There in the first place.
Yeah, well, come on. And Mr. Moffat and I have a good relationship. Anyway, they're just saying that Graham Lowe and Frank Endicott, obviously they've had their differences in the past, are joining together along with the Christchurch City Council to try and make this happen. Your thoughts on this, Graham?
Oh, it's good to see a couple of young league guys coming up and pushing us forward, isn't it? David Moffat's a really great, which he is, how about the other two? But I think actually the organisation that's blocking this the most, I mean, I agree with Bucky that the NRL now seems to be keen on it, is the Warriors.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think that they want this team in the NRL. It's going to split the support they have. You know, at the moment, they are the biggest ticket in town, or the biggest ticket in the country. You know, everyone's all behind the Warriors up the Warriors and all that kind of stuff. If it gets going, it'll fracture their support, and it'll also fracture their ability to bring players through. And that's something they've struggled over the 30 years. They've finally got depth in their squad that they haven't had before. And so it'll affect that as well, but probably more importantly, it will affect sponsorship.
And I think the biggest thing there is, it's kind of like when Auckland FC joined the A-League. It took a lot of fans away from the Phoenix.
Oh, no, the worst fans. Auckland FC fans that used to be Phoenix fans. I can tell you, they are the worst fans in the country.
Okay, just quickly, what I said, we've got a very short time. The cricket guys, it looks as though that it's heading towards a real, it looks as though that it's probably looking towards England. Just quickly, 30 seconds from you, Bucky.
Yeah, we should have put the foot on the throat, basically, when we had the chance, and we didn't do it. So we didn't get enough runs for me, and I think it'll be a draw, won't it, Graham?
I don't know. There aren't many draws in Test cricket these days, and it's not forecast to rain at all. I think we're really up against it, actually. And it has a real feel of that turn 2004 and then again in 2022 when New Zealand had the advantage in all three tests and then blew it. And England sort of came back and we didn't put the foot on the throat and all that kind of stuff. And this test has that feeling all over again. In that 2022, sort of when Mitchell got centuries in all three tests and Blundell got a truckload of runs, and somehow we managed to lose them all. And actually, in the test at Trent Bridge in 2022, we batted first, we got 550 and still managed to lose. So this test really has that deja vu feel.
Absolutely. Well, guys, I have to say, for Wellingtonians, you're not bad blokes. I have to both agree with you, but really enjoyed your input for today, guys, and I really hope that you guys actually have a great weekend. We'll be in touch a bit later. And
Planet FM.